The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Cattlemen and packers have been at odds for years, but during the COVID crisis, the fight has been highlighted as packers' margins widen and cattle producers struggle to just stay afloat. Is this the time when lasting changes in how cattle are marketed will take place? Bill Bullard, CEO of RCAF USA, says this is the best and perhaps last chance to change the markets and bring justice to the packing industry. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. For more information on Pivot BioProven, text PROVEN to 31313. The struggle of cattlemen versus packers is not a new one. It's a topic that has been at the top of many producers' lists for reform, and although there is plenty of support to do something, it's also a topic that can divide cattlemen as they look for the best route to improve those markets. Bill Bullard is the CEO of RCAF USA, and he provides his assessment of the current situation and makes his case this is the best chance cattlemen have to change the way cattle are marketed to the packers. We talk about 5014 legislation, Department of Justice investigations, and much more as we take a look at the cattle industry.
Bill Bullard, CEO of RCAF USA, joins me. Bill, there is no shortage of topics that we could discuss in the cattle industry. I'm sure of that. Let's rewind the clock back to February or March. You know, that's when cattle prices perhaps took their biggest hit. We went down pretty fast. Since that time, how would you characterize the cattle market? Have we gained some ground? And if we have, how have we gained that ground since the initial hit that we took when we kind of discovered, if you will, this virus?
Right. Well, very importantly, cattle prices have been seriously depressed for the past 5 years. So the COVID virus really stacked one crisis upon another for the cattle industry. And since the time you mentioned, mid-March time, our industry marketplace has been in severe distress. We see, for example, right now, cattle prices for fed cattle at about $100 or less. At the same time, consumers continue to spend record prices for beef. We've never seen a spread so wide between the value of cattle and the price that consumers are paying for beef. And that's an indicator of market failure. That suggests to us that the market is fundamentally broken. And that's what has been revealed very distinctly and clearly since March. When cattle prices fell, wholesale and retail beef prices skyrocketed. Retail beef prices reached record levels. The share that the cattle producer is now receiving from that consumer beef dollar has fallen to a historic low of 35 cents. The rancher gets 35 cents and it shares it within the entire live cattle supply chain, cow-calf producer, backgrounder, and feeder. And so this industry is in severe distress. We have a backlog of fed cattle. Reports indicate they range somewhere around 700,000, perhaps more. At the same time, the meat packers continue to import tens of thousands of cattle from Canada and Mexico that is essentially displacing the American ranchers' access to their own domestic market. So this could hardly be more dysfunctional than it is today.
There's a lot there for us to unpack. Let me go to, you mentioned the backlog right now. How are we doing on getting through that backlog? And as far as our packing plants, at one time we had limited capacity. Some have come back online. But where do we stand on the backlog of cattle right now?
Right. Reports indicated that we were running 60% of normal at times. And then more recently, packers have gotten back up to 95%, the reports indicated. And so now they are getting close to normal, but we still have this backlog of cattle. We have cattle that have been ready to sell but could not be sold. They've been on feed for 150 or more days. They're much heavier than they should be. and the producer who's trying to sell those cattle has nowhere to go with them. And so we have been, as an industry, we've been holding cattle back from the marketplace. And we can do that in the cattle industry because we still have some semblance left of a independent structure of our industry, much unlike the hog and poultry industries that are now completely vertically integrated by the multinational meat packers. And those are essentially industrial assembly lines that have no flexibility, no resiliency in the system. And so they've had to euthanize hogs and chickens. We haven't had to do that, as far as I have heard, in our industry. And it's because we have independent producers who can make independent decisions to hold cattle back. And we've asked the USDA to help in that respect by opening the CRP acres, another 24 million acres, that would give our entire live cattle supply chain more grass with which to hold more cattle back, with which to ease the backlog that we currently have. So we're gaining on it, but reports indicate we're still several months out.
Certainly, we're going to talk about the packers and some of the different ideas, if you will, that we've got in the works that hopefully will come to fruition. But you mentioned the spread, and certainly every cattleman knows about this spread. It's been working against a lot of folks. Was there any reason for that spread to get as wide as it did during the months of March and April, and even continues today, whenever there were plenty of cattle, but the prices went sky high in the supermarkets, and so the packer was certainly making a good margin while the cattlemen were not making a margin. It was negative.
Well, and the answer to the question is abuse of market power. The meat packers that now control about 85% of the marketplace itself has the ability to accept or decline a producer's request for timely access to the market. And so we saw the beef packers essentially exploit the situation where we had many cattle to sell but no market to sell into, and we had consumers going to the grocery stores and finding empty beef cases at the counter. You know, we've probably never seen that in our lifetime, where consumers went to the grocery store and couldn't buy the food they needed for their family. And so this has created red flags, but this spread has occurred since 2015. We began to see cattle prices collapsing further and faster than any time in history. At the same time, retail beef prices continued to increase. And since 2017, long before the COVID-19 crisis, we saw retail beef prices that consumers paid trending upward, and we saw our U.S. cattle prices trending downward. We trend downward, and then we try to recover and increase some, but each recovery was lower than the last recovery period. And so it was a downward trend. And so the spread has been growing wider and wider and wider until the COVID pandemic hit, and then it just jumped at unprecedented levels that we're seeing right now.
You mentioned, of course, the spread, and we know that that's been going on for a while, but certainly it's become highlighted during this time and even wider. Do you think that since we live in these tumultuous times, I guess we'll call them, could this be the event that suddenly makes things change? Because it's not like we haven't talked about these things in the past and wanted change, but is now the time when change finally occurs?
Well, I believe under these circumstances, now is the best opportunity the industry has ever had to reform the broken market structure. And not only is it the best opportunity, it may be the last. Our industry has been fast following in the footsteps of our sister hog and poultry industries. And that meant the meat packers are working to vertically integrate our industry by controlling the live cattle supply chain. And now is our opportunity to reverse that negative trend, that negative trajectory of our industry, which is marked by shrinking number of cattle producers. We've lost 75% of our feedlots in the past 20 years. And so while the RCAF organization, has been fighting hard to reform the broken market structure for the past two decades, only now do we have sufficient awareness for the problem to actually achieve the result. So I believe that this is our opportunity to fundamentally restructure the marketplace and the cattle industry so U.S. cattle producers can have the opportunity to earn a competitive income from a competitive marketplace. That's the ultimate goal.
when you talk about reforms, would one of the chief ways be the 50-14 plan that you have talked about? And we should, for those that maybe don't know what we're talking about, explain what that is, because we certainly have listeners that may not be directly involved in the cattle industry.
Sure. So what's happened in our industry for the past many years is we've seen the packers shift large volumes of cattle out of our price discovery market. It's the holy grail for the industry. Our industry spot market is the price discovery market, and the price of all cattle, regardless of weight or age, is based upon that price. So that's the most important marketplace for the industry. It has to remain robustly competitive. But packers have been shifting large volumes of cattle out of that market and placing them in what we call captive supplies. Those are cattle that are committed to the packer without having negotiated a price. They serve no function in price discovery. And so that price or spot market has grown ultra thin in recent years. And in fact, in 2015, when cattle prices collapsed, it was around 22%. That meant 22% of the cattle sold were establishing the base price for 100% of the cattle. In some regions, Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, it fell below 3%. So the cash market has become too thin to establish a competitive value in a competitive marketplace. We have to protect the integrity of that market. The proposal to do that was introduced by Senator Charles Grassley and others. There's six co-sponsors to that bill, and it's the 50-14 bill. That bill preserves the integrity of our price discovery market by requiring the largest packers to procure at least 50% of their daily needs for each of their plants from the price discovery market, which is the spot market, and they must slaughter those animals within 14 days. In other words, so they can't convert those animals also into captive supplies, which are forward committed cattle that aren't slaughtered more immediately. So this is a very important piece of legislation. We view this as triage. This is the very first step in reversing the negative trajectory of our industry. We must preserve the most important market for the entire industry, and that's what this bill does. It's Senate Bill 3693.
Among cattlemen, of course, there have been debates on, well, what should that number be? And 50 is what's in that bill. Some have said, well, we can't do 50 in some markets, but I'm guessing you believe 50 is a reasonable number.
Well, we were above 50 not too long ago in the mid-2000s, and it only began to shrink when the packers aggressively began shifting cattle out of that market since that time. And so we can readily return back to the time when the marketplace functioned better because there was true price discovery because you had the majority of cattle sold there. You know, economists have looked at this and said that when the meat packers can control over 50% of cattle through captive supplies, then the prices are expected to be down to monopsony levels, and the packers would be exercising market power on the industry. So we've used that economic analysis to state we must remain above 50% in that cash market in order for us to have a competitive industry that provides independent producers to have choices, to have the freedom to choose how to market their cattle. Because right now we have producers who are trying to market cattle into the spot market, but the packers won't offer them a bid. So they don't have the freedom to market their cattle the way they want to. The only way to do that is to preserve the integrity of the market itself.
Why is this the time when that might pass Congress, in which we've got a world with certainly a lot on its mind? What is the route that this gets through Congress, and how quickly could it happen, do you believe?
Well, we're actually hoping that the Senate would put this in one of the stimulus packages for the COVID-19, but I don't know if that's going to be possible. This needs to be done immediately, and I think this is the opportune time to accomplish this, even though Senator Grassley has introduced that essentially the same bill with a different percentage in years past for the past 15 years, and there has been no inclination whatsoever on the part of Congress or on the part of the rest of the industry to pursue that. And so now I believe that both consumers and producers are keenly aware of the broken marketplace. I think consumers want to support the American rancher, and they realize the American rancher is experiencing severely depressed prices. At the same time, the downstream segments of our industry are receiving record profits, and they see that as fundamentally wrong. So I think we're going to get more support in Congress, not just from the cattle state senators who have opposed any reforms in the marketplace, in fact, have completely ignored the fact that we've had a crisis for the past 5 years and problems for the past two decades. But now they are being incentivized to take action because they're hearing from more and more people, and that's going to be key. The only way we will win this reform, which we have failed to do in all previous years, is for everyone who supports the American rancher to pick up the phone and call their senator and say, we need you to support Senate Bill 3693, and you need to do it as quickly as possible. We must engage the consumers to assist the ranchers so the ranchers can continue to provide the consumers with the safest, most affordable, and abundant supply of beef the world knows.
Is there a lot of opposition on the other side, or are the packers laying low at this point?
Well, it's the same opposition we've had in previous years. It's the National Cattlemen's Beef Association that has partnered with the meat packers to prevent and forestall any type of reform. In fact, they are the main opponents to the other triage measure, and that is to require all beef sold in America to be labeled as to where it was born, raised, and harvested, so that the producer can offer to the consumer an American-made product and offer the consumer the ability to support the American domestic supply chain, support their rural communities. They can only do that with a label. And again, the entire meatpacking lobby is vehemently opposed to that measure because it takes the windfall profits that they earn from sourcing beef in from 20 different countries cheaper and then selling it to the unsuspecting consumer as if it were a domestic product. So the same opponents that have fought us for the past two decades are still fighting us today. And the only way we will overcome that again is if we can engage the consumers so the rancher can continue providing the consumer with safe and wholesome food.
Talk for just a moment about the Department of Justice right now. We've been seeing reports that packers are being investigated. Where do we stand in that? And, you know, a lot of us are maybe cynical and say, well, you know, we've heard these things before. Is this a time where something actually becomes of investigations like this?
Well, we certainly hope so, and we welcome that additional scrutiny by the Department of Justice. But we recognize that the market was broken in early 2016, and we made a request to the government to initiate an investigation then. A partial investigation was conducted, but it did not look into whether or not the packers were engaged in anti-competitive practices. And so nothing happened. And then we asked the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to initiate an investigation in 2018, and nothing happened. So what do you do when the government won't enforce our existing antitrust laws and fair competition laws? We either had to give up or we had to go it alone, and that's what we chose to do. So before the COVID-19 pandemic, before the August Kansas fire, in April of 2019, RCAF USA filed a historic antitrust lawsuit alleging the four packers have conspired unlawfully to artificially depress prices. That lawsuit has helped to focus the nation's attention on the broken marketplace. And then the Holcomb, Kansas fire caused the USDA to request an investigation, which is ongoing. And then the pandemic that occurred in 2020 has now caused all levels of government to call for investigations by the Justice Department. And that includes requests by 11 state attorneys general, by several members of both the Senate and the House, and the President of the United States. This is unprecedented to have this level of scrutiny focused on this industry, and it is absolutely essential. And we are very hopeful that the Justice Department and even the Federal Trade Commission that has been asked to engage in this, we are hopeful that they will conduct a thorough and probing investigation to finally free up the anti-competitive forces and unlawful practices that we allege are occurring in the marketplace. So we're looking forward to the outcome of these investigations, but recognize that, like litigation, these things take time. It takes a long time to investigate. We understand that, but it has to be done thoroughly. It has to be done completely, and we hope they do it as quickly as possible.
You mentioned the outcome there, and of course, it could take a while to find an outcome. Do you think, though, that outcome, is it more than just, oh, well, we found this and we have some fines, or does it create lasting change in the marketplace and further go down this path of creating a better or more fair marketplace?
Yes. So when we filed our lawsuit after it was clear that the government was disinclined to take any enforcement action of our antitrust laws, we filed a private action, which meant we have the ability to recover damages in the event that we win. And we're trying to recover the damages that cattle producers incurred when the meatpackers were engaged in this unlawful activity that we allege. And so we hope to actually recover damages from January 1 of 2015 to present. Now, the remedies that the Justice Department may deploy, I do not know what they will do in these instances. But we've asked Congress to conduct an additional investigation. We've asked them to conduct a thorough investigation to determine whether structural changes are needed in the industry itself. You know, we've called for streamlining the ability of state-inspected beef plants to begin shipping across state lines to provide them more market access opportunities so they can grow. We do need more packers. We need more packers that are decentralized because our packing industry today, we've got 75% of the capacity down in the six states in the High Plains region, and 80% of the feedlots approximately are in that region. And that has now been proven to lack resiliency and redundancy, and it has proven to be incapable of meeting the national food security needs of America. And so it appears to us that we need to look into whether or not we should be decentralizing this entire supply chain. And we've asked Congress and the president to engage in that process. And that could be a part of the outcome from these investigations. We will have to wait and see.
We hear about perhaps some of these smaller packers coming online, and this may be a good time for this because there's an opportunity here. How does that happen, though? It's not like you just build a packing plant and begin. So how does that part of this equation begin to be solved?
Well, that's right, because these packing plants require brick and mortar, and that takes a while to build, and a lot of permits need to be acquired. And so the first and best opportunity is for the existing plants to expand their capacity by bringing on more employees to process more animals. And we're seeing that occurring now. In fact, when we first saw the reports in March of empty beef cases in grocery stores, we established a website that allowed producers who could sell beef directly to consumers, including local butchers that could sell directly to consumers, to list their contact information. And then we invited consumers to go to that website and find a producer in their local area or a small packing plant that can provide them beef directly. And the requirement is the beef had to be born, raised, and harvested in the United States. And we've got over 400 cattle producers from about 43 states on that website now.
We've heard stories. A lot of these local butchers may be booked up for over a year or more. I'm sure you're hearing the same stories, right?
Well, that's right. When the consumer went to the grocery store and saw empty beef cases, it caused the consumer to wonder, where is this beef coming from and why am I not able to get it? And that has created an intense demand upon those small operators in local areas. And as a result, they are backed up for many months, as you described. And so we're way behind the eight ball. We should have been more diligent in supporting the American family farm and ranch system of agriculture that is absolutely contrary to the vertical integrated models we see in the hog and poultry industry. But that's the way this industry has been going for the past several decades. We've been moving towards allowing the highly concentrated packing industry capture control over the entire supply chains of all of our livestock industries. The cattle industry is the last frontier. But because of the high level of concentration, because we've lost literally hundreds of packing plants over the past 20 years, we can't bring them back overnight. So we're going to be in this very frustrating and difficult situation of trying to bring more packing plants online, trying to increase capacity in local areas. And this is going to be a challenge for the next several years.
Bill, of course, you know that cattlemen are pretty independent thinkers, and we have a lot of different ideas in the industry. Is there any way that we get folks to rally around central ideas? Because the cattle industry certainly pulls in different directions a lot of times.
Well, unfortunately, there's a good reason for that, and that is that the conventional organizations don't just represent the voice of the actual cattle producer. They also try to represent the voice of the multinational meat packers, and that's been the case since the mid-90s. And so the meatpacking industry has essentially infiltrated the organizations that used to exclusively represent the producers. So now organizations like ours, which is the largest producer-only cattle association in the United States with 5,800 members, we aren't strong enough to overcome the meatpacking lobby that has been established for several decades. So what we need to do is engage the consumer. We have to bring forth the voice of the consumer in order to accomplish the reforms that have been beat down time after time over the past 20 years, because this is contrary. The reforms we seek are contrary to the interests of the meatpackers. So any organization representing the meatpackers will likewise oppose these reforms. These reforms are good for cattle producers and for consumers, and we have to reach out to the consumers to gain their help. In fact, we've got 394,000 consumers signed our petition calling on Congress to restore country of origin labeling for beef, pork, and dairy products, mandatory country of origin labeling. And we did that just on an internet website at demandusabeef.com, and there's 394,000 consumers and producers on that. That's the key. That's how we can win these issues today when we have not been able to win these issues in the past.
I know it's hard to make predictions, but give me the likelihood that we get something done this year on some of this, like the 5014, and we actually get a bill passed. Where do you see things going?
Well, we are extremely optimistic. We believe that now is the time to get this passed, and now we will have the support to do just that. So we fully intend to get this passed this year. But we've already seen great improvements. The very first step to addressing a very serious problem is acknowledging that the problem exists in the first place. And up until very recently, no one in the Congress or the administration has recognized that the problem, and certainly has not publicly recognized the problem, but they have today. So today we have taken the first step. We identify the problem. Now we look for solutions. We are offering those solutions and supporting those solutions. And this is our opportunity to get those solutions in concrete. And we believe that's exactly what's going to happen within the next 12 months.
Bill, there's so much to discuss, and we're basically out of time here, but any other things that you want cattlemen to know, whether we did cover it in the call or whether we didn't, just other things on your mind in RCAF USA?
Well, you know, our big concern for many, many years has been the unfair trade policies that our nation has been pursuing. And then when we lost country of origin labeling, we did it because the World Trade Organization was overreaching and making decisions that were outside of the facts of the case. And so this overreaching on the part of this international tribunal is also likewise just now being recognized. And the Senate is actually going to vote on a resolution introduced by Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri to withdraw from the World Trade Organization. So we are finally beginning to reverse the very negative trend that we have been on for the past quarter century, pursuing a free trade ideal that has absolutely damaged the United States economy and infrastructure, including the cattle industry. So now is also the opportunity to initiate trade reforms that actually benefit the independent producers and the rural communities they support. So this is a battle between multinational corporations and consumers and producers, and we intend to win.
Bill, I really appreciate the time. Lots for us to discuss. We'll have to do it again and get an update sometime soon.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Appreciate it.
It will be interesting to see the progress of the 5014 legislation in Congress and the outcome of those Department of Justice investigations. Those decisions may determine if and when reforms come to the cattle markets. I know it's a topic of importance to many of us in farm and ranch country. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.